This is Fuse Tea in 3D. Mouth-watering fruit, perfectly fused with botanicals and tea. Serve yourself a little me time with Fuse Tea. Listen to our ASMR Mind Tingles podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 442 podcast. I'm James Brown, Editor-in-Chief of the magazine. Joining me today are two writers who made a fantastic contribution to our 25th anniversary edition, which is on sale now. Steve Hill is a regular 442 writer who pays a return visit to Bournemouth to speak to Eddie Howe, who he first interviewed when Eddie was a trainee in 1994 in one of our earliest issues. Neil Hurd is one of the world's leading experts on football shirts, and everything he knows about it can be found in the football shirts book, The Connoisseur's Guide. And Neil celebrates one of the most iconic shirts in football in his current issue, and that being the Boca Juniors kit. We also look at how fans are finding their voice online and offering an alternative to conventional punditry. Steve, Neil, all right?
Morning.
Borada.
This feels different from our previous weeks because we've had genuine top quality football writers there.
Hang on.
Whereas in this case, I would class both of you as people I actually know.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
But it's, off the reserve bench.
One of the nice things about taking over a magazine is you get to bring in people that you really rate. That failed. So Steve came back on board, and you've been writing for 442 for a lot. When I was a reader of 442, yeah. I remember you wrote a great piece about Chester City being taken over by an American guy.
Yes.
In the times when the idea of foreign owners was just bizarre.
It was. I didn't do the headline, but it was called No Surrender to the USA. Yeah, this was Mad Terry Smith, who came along. I think he previously managed an American football team in Munich, who got found out because he said, "Don't take your masks off." It wasn't who they said they were, it was just a load of kids. And his answer to that was, "Munich is a state of mind." Yeah, come in and own our club and then make yourself manager and have the teams, have the Lord's Prayer, appoint three captains, offence, defence, midfield. Amazingly, we got relegated.
Get away.
It didn't last long, did it?
No, he did get a manager in finally after Christmas, but we went down on the last day. Yeah, I wrote a big piece on that. And then I wrote another big Chester piece when Chester City went out of business.
Now, the disappointing thing for me is you are a very good writer. I really enjoy reading your articles, but they're invariably about Chester City, who are only followed...
That's niche. That is niche.
Probably, how many fans would you estimate, really? Don't lie. How many fans do you think Chester have?
Globally?
Chester City have? Probably about 4,000.
We've got 30,000 Twitter followers. I mean, you're talking globally. That
a lot of them are
slightly care.
But anyway, the reason I mentioned that is you wrote a fantastic book, because it's to explain to who Steve is. He was writing for 442 for a long time. As soon as I took over, I wanted to bring him back, as well as Andy Mitten, who's also the two writers I was associated with the magazine as a reader. But you wrote a brilliant book called The Card: Every Match, Every Mile. And it's about following Chester City for a whole season to every single game. And I've got no interest in Chester City. I know nothing about them apart from that article. And the book is so funny. It's probably because the team are so low down the scale that everybody's a neutral.
Kind of, yeah. I mean,
well, unless you support Wrexham or
just
someone.
Just to be pedant, it's Chester FC. Chester City ceased to exist in 2010. So that's why we had to reform. So we came up through the leagues and got back into the National League, which is where this book is based. Essentially, it's a book about how I used to get a lift to the match and now I don't get a lift to the match anymore, which doesn't sound like 100,000 words, but my mate, who I get a lift with at the start of the season, said, "Yeah, I'm actually emigrating at the end of this season." So I thought, oh, Christ, well, let's just do it. One big hurrah, basically. Yes, we did every minute of every match, I did.
It's sort of like Thelma and Louise.
Yeah, well, Withnail and I, it says on the front, the Withnail I of non-league football.
But there's no... Yeah, okay.
I think I was a Withnail character left behind, just...
Now, Neil, you have written two fantastic books about training shoes and football shirts. How many of the football shirts book did you sell? Because I know you asked me a while ago if I thought you should sell the rights on to a bigger publisher. What has it sold now?
Well, I first published it by myself, and it was called Another Name, and I sold 4,000 of that. And yep. I think apparently the last sales figures I had through was up to 12,000.
Okay.
And I've just sold it to German. It's come out in Germany as well.
Okay.
Which is good. So, but I don't know. I always think it should be more. Yeah, but I suppose I would.
That's a lot of books. So the football shirt book, The Connoisseur's Guide. And let's start. Let's come back to you, Steve. You've interviewed Eddie Howe as a trainee.
Yeah.
How did that come
remarkably
about?
Well, that was the first thing I ever had published. My full magazine debut was in 442, that issue. It came about, I'd just finished university. I was living in Bournemouth with my parents, I guess. And 442 had just launched. So it was our mate, our mutual friend Dan Davis, the biographer of Sir James Savile. He somehow organised for me to just write, you know, like a tiny sidebar to a bigger thing. Yeah. And I found out that Eddie Howe, who obviously then, you know, who was Eddie Howe, he was at school with a cousin of mine who happened to say, "All right, I'm at school
connection.
With a guy who plays for Bournemouth youth team." I went, well, give me his number, rang his house, said, "All right, I'll see you down the ground on Tuesday," or whatever. Did the interview. And yeah, he was like a really level headed young man. He was like a 16-year-old. You know, he's kind of made some sense at the end of the interview. Went, oh, can I just say this? You know, it wasn't like some idiot kid. So yeah, it just happened to be him. He's the only person in that entire year who made a career.
Yeah, he wasn't like the outstanding player.
No, completely random, yeah. And then he went on to be Mr. Bournemouth.
Now, when you went back down 25 years later for our anniversary issue, did he remember doing the interview?
Absolutely, yeah. Also, he also had his own car park space this time as well, with a little gold sign. Oh, yeah, he absolutely remembered it. He's like, yeah, well, my mum bought 20 copies of that. You know, for a kid to have a full picture in a magazine then. Yeah, he was like, oh, great to see you again. You know, let's not leave it another 25 years. Yeah, he's just a really friendly guy and a great interviewer. Oh, well, great for transcribing. You ask him a question, and he sits, thinks about it, and answers it in a coherent sentence that you can just type up really quickly. You know, you interview some people, and they go off at all kinds of tangents. But yeah, I mean, he's a very straight bat. I tried to bait him with the Robbie Savage thing you told me. He said Bournemouth got no right to be in the Premier League. Mm. What I really wanted him to say is, you know, of course we've got every right. And he's like, well, you know, that's the beauty of the pyramid system. You can't really get him to say anything controversial.
Because when those people like Savage were saying that, they were quoting teams like the team I support, Leeds. Mm. I don't agree with that.
Well, yeah, it's not 1974.
I do. I'm a Newport County fan, and I hate Bournemouth being in the Premier League.
You do hate it?
Well, yeah, they relegated us to non-league, effectively.
They're 10,000 people. They're a southern club which has got no affinity and passion for football. I like the way they play. They're owned by some Russian oligarch. I can't stand them. I can't wait till they go down.
But is that strong? Because they've left? Is that because they've left?
I don't think it's a proper footballing city. But and that kind of drives me mad when you look at all the clubs in the world. Like you just said, if you look at the Championship, and this is just an opinion,
yeah,
you've got Leeds, Villa, Sheffield United, go all the way down that list to Sunderland and Pompey in the division below, and poxy Bournemouth are in the Premiership, it infuriates me week in, week out. And I have no affinity to them. I don't dislike Bournemouth. But have you ever been to Bournemouth?
Do you know Eddie Howe's joining us in a minute?
Well, look.
He's here tonight.
As Steve just said, he seems like a nice guy, and it's good to see a British or English manager doing
well. I find that bizarre. Absolutely
it
bizarre.
It does. It's one of those things I just think. It's not a footballing city. It should not have a Premier League team.
But that what are the footballing cities? Liverpool, Manchester, London?
No, all the ones I just said.
Newport?
Well, what about Newport?
Well, I didn't say Newport was. That's what I'm saying. If I was in the Premiership for Newport, I could see.
But that is not how you get to be in a league, by being a footballing city. They don't. At the end of 9 months ago, you're a footballing city. You're in the Premier League.
No, it's not, but I'm just saying it's my opinion.
But then, you know, and I hear about the Championship is like a tribute league. The Championship is a tribute league to the old First Division.
Of
course it is. Villa, Sunderland, Leeds.
No, there are teams who should be in the Premiership.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like a tribute act.
No.
Listen, it's an opinion, and I'm with Savage on that.
You get into the Premier League by winning matches of football.
Yeah, you do, but it doesn't make it all right and perfect. That's what
I'm saying. It's perfect. Football's an absolute mess.
I get Watford out.
Yeah, it's a joke. Yeah, you look at the bottom 10 of the Premier League.
What happens if Bournemouth, right, stay in the Premier League for 20 years?
Yeah, then they might.
And they gradually build.
No, rubbish. They won't. They rebuild the stadium because they've got the money and they've got the Premiership money. They'll build it to 20 if they're lucky, and they'll fill that with tourists who just want to come down and see Man United when they play. It's not a footballing city. A footballing city is Sunderland in League One getting 30,000 people. It's Portsmouth in League Two getting 20,000
people. That's because they're bigger places.
No, it's not. It's not.
Sunderland's a much bigger place
than Bournemouth.
Yeah, but
Portsmouth's not much bigger than Bournemouth. Is it hell?
I don't like Portsmouth.
Pompey's a proper footballing city.
By proper footballing city, you mean just has lots of hooligans, is basically what you're saying.
Well, of course, hooligans are affiliated to the big cities, but
Portsmouth, I've been down, I know those lot well. You know, and nearly you don't see anybody going around when they're playing football in the park with a Man U shirt on, Liverpool shirt. They're all wearing Pompey shirts. I think that's
well, true. Yeah, when I used to live in Bournemouth, you wouldn't see a Bournemouth shirt.
It is. Have you been out to Portsmouth?
everyone in Bournemouth supported Southampton 20 years ago. When I was down there recently, I saw a couple of Bournemouth shirts, which you would never see.
It's an opinion anyway. I'm probably right.
Bournemouth have found these 10,000 new fans. I mean, are they... Is everybody who's ever been to Bournemouth in their life now go to every game, or have they just suddenly become a Bournemouth fan? Oh, yeah, because when I used to go in the same league as Chester, 3,000 tops at Bournemouth. They were a shit-ass team like us.
Can we just come back to Eddie Howe for a minute?
Disrespect to Bournemouth fans out there.
Eddie Howe, is he surprised by his success?
He doesn't seem to be, because I sort of said, are you pinching yourself? He said, well, that would suggest that I haven't put a lot of hard work into this. He's done it very methodically, obviously with a huge injection of cash from this Maxim Denham. He's a guy that you never see. What does he look like? I mean, he's not a very visible guy, is he? He's just quietly put this money in, got the guy won. But yeah, he said to Howe, I want the Premier League in 2 seasons. He's like, I think that when the bottom of League One, he said, I want Premier League. It's like, are you joking?
But that conversation must take place at Notts County when they have
Everyone does.
Anywhere, Portsmouth, anywhere where those... A big spending guy comes in and they have that conversation. They go, that's not going to happen. Well, I mean, he says that in the piece, doesn't he? That's not going to happen.
They've just done it the right way. I mean, they haven't really splashed money on any huge signings, have they?
The year they went up, Leeds beat them twice.
Back to Leeds.
No, but they weren't all that. I'm just saying, having been to Bournemouth to watch them, they weren't all that. But I think the recruitment has been really good. I think they took Lewis Cook from us.
Brooks from Sheffield United.
Yeah, they basically just have picked very good emerging players from Championship teams and really strong players on the fringes of the first team bench. Places like Liverpool.
He said he has trouble attracting big names there because you're probably going to go to Sunderland or Leeds if you've got a choice for similar money than going to a club like Bournemouth. So he's had to work for it.
But I mean, they had Wiltshire, and it didn't work out because Wilshere's fitness and his injury. Yeah. Mm.
Jermaine Defoe went back briefly, didn't he?
Did he talk in the piece about England?
I asked him the token question. He gave that absolute token answer that you always get. I like the day-to-day training of a full-time job.
Did he speak off the record about whether any other bigger clubs have come into him since his time at Burnley?
No, there was no off the record. His press guy was sat basically looking over our shoulder. So... It was all on the record. It was all a pretty straight bat, as I say.
Okay, let's move on to Neil Hurd's first piece for 442, the Boca Juniors strip. Mm. It's a beautiful strip. It's a world-renowned strip. But why did you choose that one in particular to start with?
I suppose I'm kind of intrigued, or not, I'm pulled towards shirts which, from the minute they walk on the pitch, any one of us in this room and any fan around the world, quite frankly, would know which that team is. You know, so they're really unique and they become the overused word iconic. Yeah. You know, so Ajax, I'd say, would come to mind in that. Boca would be top of that. You know, so that came on. If they come on in blue with a big yellow band, everybody around the world is going to say Boca. If somebody came on in red and you were looking at it hazily, you wouldn't know quite who it could be. It could be Bayern, it could be Man United, it could be any hundred of them, Liverpool. Do you know what I mean? But the Boca kit just strikes a chord.
Why do you think more teams don't go for that sort of broad upper chest band? Because did Bournemouth have it in the 70s, or was it? Did West Ham have it for a while?
West Ham had a band across. Yeah, they did. Yeah. I've got some of them with
a
the
pale
Adco,
blue with McAvenny. A burgundy band across. Yeah. Why did more teams not go for that?
You know what? I don't know. It's a good question.
Tell us how the shirt came about, because there's a nice story behind the origination of the design.
There's a lot, like with lots of sort of iconic shirts, there seems to be like a nice story behind it. And with Boca, there's a few, really, because they were formed in the Italian district of Buenos Aires. And they actually clashed with another team who were named after Nottingham Forest, as lots of the early teams over there were named after English teams. And they both wore red.
Were they called Nottingham Forest?
They were called something Allegro de Nottingham, I think.
Okay.
Literally. And Boca Juniors are called Juniors as a nod to the English influence, or British influence, I should say.
Yeah.
And they played a game in red and they said, look, we're going to meet each other. So whoever wins this match is going to have to change can keep the red and then change strip the next. And Boca lost.
Yeah.
And so for number one, there was this little story where they had to do that to change anyway. So then they lost and had to decide on a kit, and they couldn't quite know what to decide because there was a few various, you know, bits going into it. And because they're the Port District, they said, well, I'll tell you what, let's name it after the...
Who did? Who said it?
The three chairmen, apparently. Okay. Well, actually, I have since read that it didn't actually happen in one instance. They saw boats coming in and out, and one of the boats, and there were only three of them who came in that three-month period, the Statos have really looked into it over there, was carrying the flag of Sweden, and that's where it comes from.
Okay.
So it's after the Swedish flag. But actually, if you look at it, I suppose the Swedish flag is a little bit lighter than Bocca playing blue now, but that's what it was. So once they said, look, let's play in blue and yellow after the Swedish flag.
So isn't the Swedish flag blue out of yellow rather than yellow out of blue?
It's a yellow cross on a blue background,
okay.
Yeah. And so that's how it came about.
Has it changed much over the years?
No. So initially before that, I think then they had played in like a Peru band for the first few years.
Red stripe.
Well, it was yellow and blue, but the yellow
style.
Sash. Yeah, exactly. Like that off, you know. Bocca Juniors, were their enemies.
I quite like that strip as well. I used to, at school in Woodhouse in Leeds, we had the Crystal Palace kit.
Yeah.
White with the red and blue across, shouldered out of the hip.
That's right. I think that's the thing. It's interesting you say that. As soon as you start to say shirts, people often go back to Peru 78, you know, which is that sash going across, or Crystal Palace get referenced a hell of a lot. But that's maybe divergent. But, you know, so that's what they played with. And then they went to the band and it stayed virtually that band until today.
In around that time growing up as a keen Sabutio player in Leeds, there were a lot of Leeds white kits that had been changed with red felt tips. Like wobbling lines. Okay, what do you think is the golden age of the football shirt?
You know what, that all depends. I've learned from doing the book that depends on your age. Because basically, when
like
I interviewed,
music.
Yeah, but everybody you interviewed for that book, or I interviewed for that book, and I spoke to many people, on their age, they went back to their youth. So I would say the 80s
for you.
I was kind of that, you know, I was born in 1969. So, but I still would say that. But then you speak to all the modern kids nowadays, everybody goes back to the 90s and all that garish stuff that probably like our era didn't like.
Yeah,
you know, all the crazy colours sort of and pattern shirts. They're like the most favourite Kurtz. And then you've got people who are a bit older than me, and they say the 70s when it was all
it seems to be like the music that is synonymous with a really important part of your life
when
you're starting to define who you are and what you're into.
Yeah, without a doubt. And that I didn't actually, maybe I was being thick, but I actually didn't see that coming until I did the book. You know, it was interesting. You could almost say to the person I was interviewing, you know, if they were in their 50s, I knew they were going to then say the 70s or the 60s. Mm-hmm. If they were in my age in their 40s or whatever, they were going to say the 80s. You could literally strata it like that.
This is Fuse Tea in 3D. Mouth-watering fruit, perfectly fused with botanicals and tea. Serve yourself a little me time with Fuse Tea. Listen to our ASMR Mind Tingles podcast.
Can't get enough eye-popping, jaw-dropping, heart-stopping reality TV.
It's the best.
Then head to Hey You, home of reality on demand. Stream and download the latest episodes from shows like Keeping Up with the Kardashians and The Real Housewives, same day as the US.
What's more fun than that?
Or binge old faves like The Simple Life and The Hills.
That's hot.
Hey You, reality on demand. Start your 1 month free trial now.
You're listening to the 442 podcast. Don't forget to subscribe through iTunes and Spotify. Moving on to the second big feature you've written in our anniversary issue, Steve.
Yeah.
Mark Goldbridge. Now, I had to brief you on Mark Goldbridge. He's somebody I've been watching on Twitter for a while, and I actually found him through Goldbridge World, which is the people who follow him on Twitter and retweet him because they think he's unintentionally hilarious. Now, he's become more knowing over the last year, I think, as he's become aware that people think he's like Alan Partridge. But if you don't know who Mark Goldbridge is, he's a vlogger. He supports Manchester United. He's based in the Midlands. and he's got fairly sophisticated graphics on his YouTube screen, you know, and not only does he comment live on Manchester United games, he also comments on his own FIFA games.
Yep, yeah.
And there's also some nice clips of him on holiday as well. And there's also now clips of him playing football and getting into rucks with other vloggers in arranged matches. So I said, look, find out about this guy and go and find him. So what was he like?
Yeah,
because he's a very modern, he's a prime example of a very modern phenomenon.
It's
the equivalent of fanzines, isn't it?
I was only vaguely aware of him when you asked me. I pretended I'd heard of him just to get the job, really.
No, you actually said you didn't know who he was.
Oh, right. I didn't even go that far. But yeah, I watched him for a couple of weeks and I just arranged to meet him over Twitter. I could have been anyone. I said, let's just meet in a pub in Solihull. Yeah. It was quite trusting of him to turn up because I imagine he does have some insane followers.
Yeah,
yeah, he's just this mild mannered guy. Got himself a lager shandy and spoke.
Is he tall? I say that because you only. Well, no, it's like the sort of Des Lynam thing. Does he wear jeans under his jacket? Because he looks quite small. But he was a policeman.
Yeah, I mean, he dressed up quite smart because he thought a photographer was coming. I had to break the news to him that it wasn't. He had his best Pringle on.
Yeah.
But, no, he's of medium height, James. I don't know. I mean, it's not Crime Watch. We were sat down. So we sat for an hour in this empty pub in Solihull, and he pretty much spoke non-stop. Again, there was no dead air. Even after the tape was rolling, we just sat and talked about football for a bit.
Having read and edited the article, he comes across quite different to how he is on screen.
Kind of. It's just like a sort of, a lesser version. I think he ramps it up maybe 20% on screen. Yeah, he's just a very normal guy and a genuine football fan and quite a shrewd analyst, I think, came across. He seems to know his stuff. He's always banging on about the Glazers and Woodward. And he cares about the financial side of clubs. Mm.
Is he making
He still works.
He's money out of
he
it.
He still works part-time.
Okay.
So everyone assumes that if you're on YouTube, you're coining it in. But unless you're one of these Minecraft weirdos or Logan Paul, you know, there are various levels of finance. Yeah, he was just a nice guy.
How was he about the idea that were we the first media outlet to approach him? Or has he been featured on television?
Well, he was on TalkSport this week. I don't know if that's off the back of us doing it. What he said to me, he said, as soon as it was 4-4-2, I said, I was definitely keen for it because I've always read that mag, but not for the last 10 years. he was pleased to do it, I think. I mean, he responded very quickly to the invitation.
Great.
He was just kind of a mild-mannered guy. He wouldn't say boo to a goose, really.
But, he was mild-mannered.
I'd say so, yeah.
Is he not?
He didn't swear. He swore once in the entire hour. But as he said, when he watches football, you know, he undergoes a startling metamorphosis. And
is it an act, do you think?
Not so much an act. I think he does genuinely get angry. So I've been watching him.
So funny. Have you watched him?
No. I've been watching him.
He's so funny when he gets well.
I'll have to watch
him. He's shouting and screaming about a computer game.
Yeah.
He loses it over FIFA, yeah.
He loves it. Though.
He said he almost had a heart attack with FIFA.
He's shouting and screaming about a computer game. And we've actually got a few clips of him. Let's have a listen.
You can't miss this in your bloody boots that look like you're running around in your feet. You can't miss. You can't miss this. He's bloody missed it! What a prat! Phil Jones! It was bloody written in the stars! Phil Jones! What are you doing? Why can't Eric Bailly take it? Phil bloody Jones running around with no feet on his... No bloody skin feet! Pink boots! It's the pink boots, Marcus! The bloody pink boots!
See what I mean? He's nuts, but he's very engaging. He's really engaging. Like most things that I find on Instagram or Twitter, I kind of get into them for a couple of weeks and then you kind of disappear away. And then when you see him again a few months later, you think, what the heck is that?
So, well, since I've interviewed him, I've continued watching it. I did a watch along with Man United Chelsea. So it's him watching the game on a Sunday. My son loves it as well because there's a little bit of swearing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was an absolutely dreadful game. So you end up just watching Mark Goldbridge. Losing his mind over this appalling game. Like, do they know that we have to win this game at football? Has somebody told them they're required to win?
But you know what this is an extension of? Do you remember when Sky used to do Fan Zone?
Yeah. Mm.
That used to be great viewing. Absolutely great. I used to love that. And he's also got some footage on there of his time on a beach on holiday.
No, thank you.
What are you? No, you're not.
No, I'm all right, I'm talking, mate. No, I'm talking. Piss off. I'm talking. No. No.
You wanker.
No, bye-bye. Go away. What are you talking about?
Fuck off. You wanker.
All right.
You wanker.
Yeah.
Don't buy fruit in Mallorca.
Wait, but funny enough, he said the idea for the whole thing came about while he was on a Lilo in Mallorca.
Get away.
He's clearly a holiday thinker.
He likes the holidays. He did say a bit I didn't use it. His favourite thing to do is watch football on holiday without shouting about it. He said the best match of the year is the one he watches in Mallorca in a pub on his own. Unrecorded, yeah.
When he's relaxed.
Yeah, when he's actually not being filmed.
And is he married?
He's married, he's got children, yeah. He does a school run.
What does his wife make of his newfound fame?
Didn't really get onto that. He said his kids haven't seen it. He does worry about the day his kids go, you know, someone at school said, I'm sure I've seen your dad swearing about Manchester United on YouTube.
I mean, do you think that people are watching this because it's genuinely more realistic and more and funnier and more interesting than people who are worried about their reputations and worried about the next time they meet the player that they've just coated off, like mainstream pundits, ex-players?
Exactly that. Yeah, that was his point. He just said mainstream punditry is just so banal. He made the point about even Alex Ferguson would come out after they'd been thrashed and just say, yeah, unlucky, you know. He said he wanted Alex Ferguson to absolutely tear strips off them, and he wasn't getting that. So he says that the fan interaction fills that void of what people actually think. Mm. He just said he loves talking about football on the bus, at work. He just loves the whole fan interaction. So it's a natural extension of that, was his point.
And it's not his real name, is it? Mark Goldbridge.
Astonishingly. There were a lot of conspiracy theories around, and I just said, have you heard this one? Yeah, that's right. That's my name. His name is Brent De Cesare.
Get away.
Brackets David Brent. there is no Mark Goldbridge.
Brent. But he explains in the magazine why that is.
Well, because he's an ex-copper. He was fraud squad. He was looking into financial fraud. He had to go to his bosses. I'm starting a YouTube channel. Can I use my own name? Well, we'd rather you didn't. So he came up with Mark Goldbridge, which is very close to Alan Partridge, isn't it?
What? Oh,
he's already got the Brent from David. <Yeah.
laughs>
He didn't stand a chance.
Yeah, I like.
But you know, he's fairly happy to talk about it. There's also the theory that he's a Nottingham Forest fan and he just chose United. Just
but he explained
the most...
that, and it was quite.
I didn't see any reason to disbelieve it.
Yeah, if you do, this is a real kicker to go and buy the magazine. If you go and read the magazine, I think it was fair explanation as to how children get dragged to different games by parents and circumstances and people move. So
yeah, but don't you think that's such an usual one when they're Man U fans?
It's a what?
You know, such the usual excuse when they're, but my old man spotted Man U, that's why I support Man U.
No, it wasn't that, because it was why, he wasn't explaining the Man U connection, he was explaining the Nottingham Forest connection.
Oh, okay.
To do with his parents getting divorced.
You can see I get angry a lot.
His dad supported Chelsea, his mum supported Man U, and they used to go and watch Forest occasionally because he lived in Nottingham.
Yeah.
I mean, Man U are supported all over the world, aren't they?
So, Neil, do you think that what Goldbridge and co. are doing is the evolution of the old fanzine, football fanzine culture?
You know what? Actually, I'm kind of like a bit of a Luddite about...
No shit.
Yeah. About the world, should we say there. No, so I was
It's not of, football if it's on a screen.
Yeah, you know, and I think I've come to see the good in it, you know, and that he's a good example in a way. If you'd said to me at the beginning, oh, this guy does that, I would have said, oh, what an awful idea, I can't stand it. But at the same time, I do agree totally with what we're saying about modern punditry, even on the radio and on the telly. I spend my whole life listening to Talk Sport, quite frankly, over Radio 5 yep. Live. And I'm just thinking, please put somebody on who's going to say something that I agree with instead of all the same people saying the same stuff. So, yeah, to go back to what you're saying, yes, I think it is kind of like that fanzine thing. And it's nice that we can take control and say the things we'd like to say, whatever they may be, because you're not hearing it on the mainstream media in whatever guise. So, yeah.
I like that about it. Even though he's a Man U fan, I like the fact that it's... And I don't have any... Anyone's read my magazines will probably guess I don't have any journalistic qualifications. And I started doing a fanzine, and that's why I like these people getting out and just putting their own voices out there, because why shouldn't they?
Yeah, know? No, I agree with you. That's what I mean. I think I'm a little bit of a slow convert to it, to see the good. I've always heard about Arsenal TV, which I haven't watched, because I kind of don't like to hear people just arguing. You know, on the radio when fans phone in and they end up arguing, I'm just not into that. But if they're actually articulating it and arguing in a good way, then yeah, and I think some of this stuff is that, allowing you to speak, you know.
Do you have anything like that at Newport County?
Lord, no, they don't.
We have like a message board, and that's about as far as it goes.
What happens? You get home from Newport. Who did they play last week? Who's their last
home
game?
We beat Lincoln, the mighty Lincoln. So we've got Morecambe away. If we win, we're in the playoffs.
Okay, so you get home from beating Lincoln. You put the CFAX on.
Yeah. 404. No, not 404.
And then you get on and you start the computer up and it goes all that weird high pitch, that logging in sound.
Yeah.
Then Spectrum. And then you go to the message board.
Yeah. I am kind of like that. And you know what?
Real basic pixels of a club logo.
Yeah.
Club
logo. Remember a club call? 50 pence for 1 minute.
Do you have to put your phone in one of those rubber receptors?
Yes, I do, actually.
Tell me what's going on with Newport County, because you came up against some pretty good teams in the League Cup this year.
We're having a really good moment. It's funny enough, meeting Steve today, hearing his story, is one of the only people from his club side who I could say are even close to the misery that we've had. You know, everybody sort of has these battles of misery.
Do you like that misery?
No, I don't. I hate it.
But you do, don't you?
No, I...
Yeah,
it made for a better book.
Yeah, yeah. My
your
misery is your joy.
When the joy just cracked.
Hey, nobody likes a happy story. Yeah,
the optimism just dissolved when you realised you were going to yet again have another long decline.
It was an astonishing season. I think we broke the record for consecutive home defeats in the season I wrote the book.
Yeah. That's what I mean. That kind of misery to the normal support.
It's character building. It's character building.
And we've had that. You know, we went bankrupt. We were exiled. We weren't even allowed to play in Wales.
You're no one in football if you've not been bankrupt and had points
kicked out of your country.
Have you had points deducted?
Oh, listen, James,
we've had.
If you want a misery battle, I win.
Luxury.
Well, I don't know. It's just close.
We would beat you, and you come close.
So Chester.
We were
Chester
exiled,
FC.
Steve. We weren't even to play. We had to travel to
Morton. We had to play in Macclesfield in the 90s, 80-mile round trip for a home game.
Yeah, so we tried this. So yeah,
you had to play.
We used to live in a pit in the ground.
How many? Yeah, I know. This is that battle in it of misery.
We've had a much worse time than you.
Who's your coach? Is it anyone that we would know, or your manager?
He's becoming well known. It's a guy called Mike Flynn. He's the same part of Newport.
Flynn.
As Yeah, Flynn.
Is he related to Brian Flynn?
No, he's not.
Okay.
He's same. I'm from a place called Pill in Newport, which is a docks area.
Pill?
Newport. Yeah, well, it's Pill Gwently. It means like a docks in Welsh.
Okay.
And he, Tony Pulis, who's the other person, he's from Pill. We all went to the same school, but those two are famous and successful, and I'm not.
At the same time?
They're a bit older than me. No, Flynn is younger. Pulis was above me.
But were you at school with him?
Well, his brother, Ray, is Tony's brother, and he was really better at football than Tony was, but Tony went on to be successful.
Okay.
Flynn, he's from that. He played professionally. He played in the Championship for Wigan, probably most famously. We had him. He came back to play for us.
I'm overpowered by the glamour here. It's like Beverly Hills 90210.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying to you. This is glamour for us, though. Imagine being fucking non-league.
So you've got a chance of going up.
Yeah, so we win on Saturday. No one can stop us. If we win, we stay in the playoffs. What I mean is we're
going to be Stalin there.
Yeah. It's not. What I mean is if we win, we go up. No, we don't go up. We're in the playoffs. Okay. You know, it's not like we have to wait.
It's turning to Schwarzenegger. No one can stop us now.
Well, I take that. Maybe I need that.
Well, good luck to you. But teams like Newport shouldn't really be in the league. Certainly not in the English league.
Yeah. Right, that's a great
that's
way
a
to end
point.
This.
That is a good point.
Thank you very much. Neil Hurd, who's the Welsh voice you've heard, is the author of the Football Shirts book, which covers everything from the iconic to the unusual. Even the most hardcore fan will find something new they didn't know. And he's also written about Boca Juniors' shirt in our new issue, which is our 25th anniversary. And Steve Hill is the author of The Card, Every Match, Every Mile, his quest to follow Chester home and away over the course of one season. He also has two pieces in the current issue of the magazine, which is why we were talking about Eddie Howe and why we're talking about the Man United vlogger, Mark Goldbridge. The 25th anniversary of the mag is out now, and you can buy it online or you can buy it in a decent newsagent. It features a countdown of 101 best players of our lifetime, the magazine's lifetime, the past 25 years, plus the unseen photographic life of Pelé and Peter Hooton of The Farm, writing a great piece about Bill Shankly. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast via Spotify and iTunes, and you can follow us all on Twitter. The magazine is at 442. I'm James Brown. Neil, what are you?
Neil Hurd, author.
Neil Hurd, author. Is that on Instagram as well?
On Instagram, I'm Neil Hurd Trainers, to confuse everyone.
Okay. And Steve, what are you?
Twitter at Hilly the Fish.
Excellent. Until next time, goodbye.
This is Fuse Tea in 3D. Mouth-watering fruit, perfectly fused with botanicals and tea. Serve yourself a little me time with Fuse Tea. Listen to our ASMR Mind Tingles podcast.